Oh, good morning, church. Man, it is great to be gathered with you today. I know we're missing a lot of folks, but I'm going to be honest. I think we're better off without them. I know there's a lot of people who are on spring break this week. I hope they have a good week with their family and get some vacation time in. I think that's wonderful, and we do miss them, but we are glad you are here. We're glad whether you're in person or online, you're an important part of this congregation. So earlier, Russ introduced Braxton Hopkins, who was baptized this week. So I took this picture, and if you did not know better, this is just me. Does it not look like he is one of her children? I mean, looks like he. And I mean that these two are look about a couple of inches and pounds apart, but other than that, awfully similar. And I was so thrilled when Ashley called and told me that Braxton was wanting to become a Christian, wanting to be baptized, and it was just a great day. So we are thankful for this new brother in Christ. Now, switching gears a little bit, a few years ago there was a TV show, maybe you remember it, I think it's still on probably one of the streaming networks. It was called Doomsday Preppers. Does anybody remember this show? Raise your hand. It existed. I promise it existed.
Maybe it's new.
It's right. They weren't prepared. So the whole premise of this show was pretty simple. They focused on, it was a reality show where they talked to people, met with people who were convinced that some sort of catastrophic event was going to be happening, and they wanted to be ready. Different people imagined different endings, but they did some similar things. They would build hidden rooms into their homes. They would stock shelves with weeks or months or years' worth of supplies. They'd store all kinds of water and medical supplies and generators, and it was just a whole thing. They were just preparing for the end of civilization, right? And there was a kind of a common theme that came up from week to week, that when things go bad, you're not going to be able to trust other people, so you have to be able to take care of yours and your own. Does that make sense? I mean, that's the general prediction, is that things are going to go bad, and you're going to have to be able to take care of yourself. So preparation looks a whole lot like isolation. You're prepared to be by yourself. So you have to protect what's yours. You have to get away from everybody else because they're going to want what's yours. You have to be safe behind some walls. That's generally, and broadly speaking, kind of what doomsday prepping was about. But truthfully, we didn't need a TV show today to tell us about that mindset, because we got a glimpse of that just a few years ago. Think back to the early weeks, months of COVID. Do you remember this little scene right here? People were stockpiling everything. I mean, it was crazy. Water, oh man, you couldn't find a bottle of water to save your life. Canned goods, gasoline. People were putting gasoline in really unsafe containers. Let's put it that way. And toilet paper, it was like, $10 a sheet. And I mean like for one of the little squares. And there was this subtle shift in how people viewed each other. Because it's no longer friends and neighbors. This is competition for resources. These are the people who might buy my toilet paper out from under me, right? And do I have enough for me and mine? And what if I run out and I'm not going to be able to get any more? That was the mindset. I remember feeling that way. Maybe you felt that way too. I think instinctively we all felt it, that when things start to fall apart, the natural response is to pull inward. So that's what ought to make us stop in our tracks when Peter talks about the end of all things. Here we continue our study through the letter of 1 Peter. Now, if anyone had a reason to protect themselves, it would be the Christians Peter's writing to. Again, this ought to make us pay attention, because we recognize these circumstances. They are facing incredible pressure. They're under a lot of uncertainty and scrutiny, and they're suffering. And so if anybody ought to be drawn in, it is these people, right? Times are hard. So what advice does Peter give to them? What do they need to do to prepare for the end? And this is what he says in 1 Peter chapter 4, beginning at verse 7. He says, "The end of all things is near. Therefore, be alert and of sober mind so that you may pray." The first thing when the end is near, the very first thing that you need, like water in a desert, right? If you're going to the desert, what's the first thing you need? You need water. This is the first thing. The first thing he says you need is you need prayer. Your survival list should start with prayer. And the way he says it is so just matter-of-factly, isn't it? He says the end is near, like just a common saying. The end is near, and it's a way he says it in a way that's supposed to bring clarity, not panic. I guess that's the best way to put it. In fact, he says, be sober-minded. That's the phrase, and it's a strange word in Greek, being sober, because we think about that means, like, you know, don't be using drugs and alcohol. But it is kind of related to clear thinking. Sober-minded means steady and controlled. In other words, not consumed by fear. But as Christians, he's saying you don't have to be controlled by fear. You don't have to be rooted in fear. Look, if you don't know and trust God, then when the world goes to heck in a handbasket, if you don't understand God, if you don't know that the end is already set in stone, then everything matters a lot. I mean, you'd be completely vulnerable, especially when you're in circumstances like these Christians. If you don't know and trust God, if you don't know what the end is, then everything gets really, really scary. Every change in your circumstances or in the laws that you live under, that just sort of looms over you. And every act of violence, no matter how far away or remote or unrelated to you, that all threatens you. Every new government official, every ugly look from a passing stranger, everything is targeting you. It makes you feel vulnerable. It has the potential to bring your whole world crashing down. So if you don't know God, if you don't trust God, if you don't know how the end is, then of course it's scary. So it's no surprise that the world prepares with anxiety and obsession, because there's a lot to be anxious about and a lot to obsess about. That totally makes sense to me. But Christians don't do that. We prepare with clarity and dependence on God because we do know how the story ends. It ends with Christ standing in victory and God sitting in judgment. And that's our family. So we don't have to be scared. Church, you don't have to be anxious. You know how it ends, and you know the judge, and you know the defense attorney. So the world panics, but the Christians pray. And that's the first supply you need. You need to have this open line of communication. So ask yourself, am I reacting? Or am I praying about the future? First question you need to ask yourself. Am I reacting or am I praying? Secondly, continuing on, verses 8 and 9. Above all, and by the way, that when Peter says that, it ought to make us pay attention. That means that this is a priority command. Above all, love each other deeply. Because love covers a multitude of sins. Offer hospitality to one another without grumbling. Because the end is near, do you know what you need? You need love. You need to love other people, and you need to be loved on by other people. And I am not talking about that passing friendly, "How you doing, Bob?" "Doing great, Jake." I mean, not that kind of love. This is a deep love, an intentional love. This is an earnest, some of your translations may use the word earnestly. And the kind of love
that is deep and purposeful, because that's the kind of love that covers a multitude of sins. I love that phrase, by the way, covers a multitude of sins. I would love to get paint that covered a multitude of sins, right? I would love to have clothes that covered a multitude of sins. I would love to, right? There's a lot of things that we think of. We're like, boy, I'd like something to hide all my flaws. Love covers a multitude of sins. This is not saying that love ignores a multitude of sins and pretends a multitude of sins doesn't exist. But it is love that refuses to let that sin destroy the relationship. It doesn't ignore it. It acknowledges it, but it covers it over. It says, look, I know you messed up, but it's okay. We're going to work this out. That's the sort of love we're talking about. And again, notice how this contrasts with the way the world prepares for the end. The world prepares by closing and then locking and then bolting and then boarding up the door. That's how you prepare for the end. But not us. Now, Christians are throwing the door wide open and turning on the lights and the welcome sign and saying, y'all come on in. That's the difference between us and the world. Just when everyone else is shutting folks out, we're inviting folks in. That is hospitality. It's refusing to think that every person you meet is going to be taking advantage of you. It refuses to categorize everyone else who hasn't done things right as evil because they haven't gotten all the right answers you've gotten or because they haven't had all the advantages you've had. It refuses to do that. It's going to be hospitable regardless of the circumstances. And that seems counterintuitive, at least to me. Why would Christians act like that when the world is a dangerous place? Do you think the world's a dangerous place? Raise your hand if you think the world's a dangerous place. The rest of y'all are foolish because it is crazy out there. It is crazy out there. I mean, you don't have to watch the stories about bad stuff happening in Nashville. You can just get Coffee County, crazy stuff. Yeah, absolutely, the world's a dangerous place. So why would Christians here in ancient Rome who are under persecution and scrutiny, why at that moment would they be hospitable when they're most vulnerable? And Peter says it's because the end is near. Because the end is near, you can do it. It's like, you know, if you watched a basketball game out of context, and I've been watching a fair share of basketball here recently. Maybe you have too. And if you just watched the end of a game without context, without knowing what time it was, you would think, what a stupid shot for somebody to be shooting from half court. There's no odds of them making that, right? Why would he shoot that shot? There's got to be a better shot. It's because you don't know. There's no time left on the clock. So all of a sudden, a half-court shot looks like it makes a lot of sense. And sometimes it may go in. Yeah, it's a long shot. But when you understand that end is near, that shot makes sense. Being vulnerable and inviting people into your homes and being hospitable and loving on people doesn't make any sense when a dangerous world unless you understand the end is near. Unless you know how the story ends and that you're just living under that grace, it doesn't make sense. Because the end is near, there is no time for shallow affections. There is no time for lip service love. There is no time for holding grudges. Brothers and sisters, we got more important stuff to do. We got loving on people to do. I don't care what the preacher up the road thinks about what I say. I don't have any time for that. I don't care what your ungodly neighbor or your overgodly neighbor thinks about you. We got no time for that. Just love on them. That's all we got. So ask yourself, where am I easily offended or withdrawing my love from others? Who needs my forgiveness? Who needs my welcome? And that's what we ought to be about. So that's the second thing you need. You need love. And finally, each of you should use whatever gift you have received to serve others as faithful stewards of God's grace in its various forms. If anyone speaks, they should do so as one who speaks the very words of God. If anyone serves, they should do so with the strength God provides, so that in all things God may be praised through Jesus Christ. To him be the glory and the power forever and ever. Amen. Amen. The final thing Peter says that we need to be doing to prepare for the end is service. Now, each one of us, we've talked about this on other occasions, everyone's got gifts, everyone's got abilities that God has given us. Every one of you, you have opportunities and relationships that nobody else here has. You may think I can't sing as good as Tommy or I can't preach as good as Rebecca, but you have opportunities and you have relationships that Tommy and Rebecca don't have. God has given you certain graces that he has not given anyone else. God has entrusted those graces to you. They're not even yours, right? God has given us these things as stewards. They aren't ours to keep for our benefit. They are his to use for his purposes. But he's entrusted them to us. So when you're talking to someone else that you know, and maybe it's a friend, maybe it's a family member, maybe it's a neighbor, maybe it's a stranger in Walmart. I don't know. When you're having a conversation with someone else, you better be speaking like God was standing in your shoes. That's the way you talk to them. If what you are saying does not align with what God would say in this circumstance, you are saying the wrong thing. You speak with the very words of God. And when you're serving, when you are helping others, you'd better be serving with God's heart and with God's strength. I used to have a football coach, and I was a decent football player. I wasn't a great one. I was a pretty good one. And I had some size, and I had some vague ability to be big. And that was what I was good at in football. But one of the things that I was not very good at was that I was always thinking about having enough energy at the end. So when I started playing high school ball, my coach would get on to me because I was not giving it my all because I was thinking, I've got to have some for the end, you know. I don't want to wear myself out in the first quarter or the second quarter, first half. I want to have enough for the end. But I'd do that, and I'd get to the end, and I'd still have some left over. I was never giving it my all. And what he's saying is, don't do that with your service. The end is near. We're in the fourth quarter. We're in the final minutes. You've got to serve like you don't have another opportunity to serve, because the truth is, you may not have another opportunity to serve. And think about how different this is from the world that we live in. Because again, the world prepares for the end by hoarding resources. And Christians prepare for the end by spending their resources for the benefit of others. So ask yourself, the question for this one is, what has God given you that you are not using? In the second and third centuries, the Roman Empire was struck by this devastating plague. Historians believe that one of these plagues, the plague of Cyprian, killed thousands of people, not over the course of the day, but thousands of people every single day in some cities. Thousands of people that day dying in that city. The symptoms were pretty horrifying. There was fever, there was, we'll call it nausea, there were open sores, and it spread quickly and it spread easily, and people were terrified. So when the disease hit, the natural response was, it's exactly what you'd expect, right? People fled the cities in droves. I've got to get away from those sick folks, right? It totally makes sense. In our world today, we really understand getting away from other people when there's sickness spreading. So the people fled the cities in droves to the point that families abandoned their sick relatives in their own homes. Abandoned them. And bodies were sometimes just left in the streets. I mean, literally in the streets. This is the way one ancient writer described it. He said, they pushed the sufferers away and fled from their dearest, throwing them into the roads before they were dead. This is just a historian documenting what happened in these Roman cities. That was the conditions they were under. It almost sounds unbelievable. But man, it sounds pretty believable right now. I mean, if you live through 2020, you see this coming a mile away. That matches up with what we've seen in our own world today. That there's some things you just, y'all are on your own. So this is the way the situation, this is the situation. This is the way the situation had been for a long time. This is what people did. This is just how it fell out. But then this strange thing happens is that the Christians in ancient Rome, the Roman Empire, they started doing something really different. And instead of running away, they stayed. And instead of avoiding the sick, they walked into the houses where the sick were being kept, and they cleaned their wounds, and they sat with them even as they're dying. They're not healing them, by the way. They don't have the ability to heal them. They just sit with them while they're dying so that they don't have to die alone. That's what the Christians were doing. They didn't want people to have to go through this suffering and the struggle and death all by themselves. And there was a bishop, his name was Dionysius, and he wrote about this time. This is what he said, the way he described it. Oh, he said, most of our brothers showed unbounded love and loyalty, never sparing themselves. They took charge of the sick, drawing on themselves their neighbors' diseases and willingly accepting their pain. They walked in knowing they were going to get sick. And they were like, it is worth it for me to get that same disease if I can help you along the way. That's what they were willingly doing. And so the world sees this. When everybody's going one way on interstate and you're the lone person going the other way, you are headed somewhere bad. Right? Maybe a flood, maybe a fire, maybe a tornado. But if everybody's going the other way and you're going it alone in. That's what the Christians were doing. Something bad was ahead. So the world saw them doing this, and they did not know what to do with that, because that does not make sense. Why are you on purpose going there, right? Why would you move toward the danger? Why would you risk your life for people, especially people who do not share your faith? They're not just going to do this with Christians. That I could almost understand. They're just going to do it with all sorts of people. Why would you do that? That's exactly what happened. And so while others were isolating, Christians were engaging. While others were protecting themselves, Christians were pouring themselves out. And historians have noted something remarkable: that this sacrificial love didn't just help people survive. And it did. It helped some people survive. But more importantly, it changed how the empire viewed Christianity. It was one of the reasons that the early church grew. Because the world is driven by fear and self-preservation, and Christians live like they've got something else to hope in. Their hope is not in self-preservation. That's not the best they can do. They can do much better than that. So Peter says that the end of all things is at hand. The end of all things is near. And those early Christians, they lived like they actually believed it was near. They not by withdrawing, not by stockpiling. They lived by praying and loving deeply and using whatever they had to serve others. That was their lifestyle. Church, that is my prayer for us as a congregation, that we will be every bit as crazy and generous and foolish as they were. That we might pour out our lives in prayer and love and service to our friends and neighbors and community members, to any in need. And if we can offer that prayer and that love to you this morning, if we can serve you this morning, we want you to know that we're here for you. If we can help you in any way, won't you come as we stand and as we sing?